came across a wonderful article recently called Teen Speak, How to Understand Your Kids. This is a good weekend for it because the kids are on a retreat and my son isn't here to hear this. But let me share some marvelous insights on how to understand the language that your children use from an article in a Chicago magazine by Michael Anania. Quote, "There is no point in trying to deal with the language that teenagers use with one another. By the time any of us learns this vocabulary, it will have changed. Also, these words don't really have specific meanings. Instead, each has a variety of meanings. What is meant by the teen speaker is indicated by pitch, tone, and duration of the sound, a little like Chinese. Most parents encounter the tonal dimension of teen language domestically when dealing with the inflections of the term, quote, all right, end quote. In response to an ordinary request like take out the garbage, all right can mean A, don't bother me, B, did somebody cut off your legs, C, I deeply resent the authority you have over me, but I acknowledge it and will take out your stupid garbage. D, out of affection for you and respect for your age, I will take out the garbage. Or E, okay. These variations are meant to be understood and to infuriate you. If the garbage in question is not actually overflowing, it is occasionally possible for you to appreciate the way that your otherwise unsubtle kid can subtly move from meaning A through meaning E in one short conversation. Depending on tone, the word great can mean great, not that again, or you've ruined my life. The word sure, however, never indicates simple agreement as it does in ordinary English. Depending on the duration the word is given, sure means that's just what I'd expect of an old person, you don't know what you're talking about, or you've ruined my life. Yeah has the same range of meanings as sure, but in the case of yeah, the briefest version has the most devastating intent. When used in a dramatic exit and punctuated in this manner, all three words mean you've ruined my life. Before you allow yourselves to be overcome with guilt, you should know that in the common teen speak expression, you've ruined my life, the phrase my life refers to the next 45 minutes. Everyone comes from a family. The reason you understand what this is talking about is because you had parents or you have teenagers or you're lost in space. I don't know which it is. Everyone comes from a family. Maybe yours was broken, maybe it was blended, maybe it was bonded, or maybe you had adoptive parents or foster parents or a whole series of parents, I don't know, but you have some idea of what it's like to come out of a family. And that means that this fifth secret to exceptional living applies to everybody here. You just can't be a human being and have made it this far without having had to do on some level, someplace, somehow, with families. Now, as we work through these 10 secrets, the 10 commandments, the first four secrets that we've looked at so far have to do with our relationship with God. The last five have to do with our relationships with others, and right on the bridge between those two types of relationships are the primary, most immediate relationships any of us can have, the relationships in our family. What's intriguing to me is that this secret or command does not talk to the parents and say, treat your children properly, which, as we all know, it should have said. But instead, God addresses it differently, and he says, rather, honor your parents. Why? Two reasons I can think of. One is because you can obey that one before you can obey the other. In other words, before you can be a parent and treat your kids properly, you've got to be a child and you've got to honor your parents. But secondly, and more to the point, the way you treat your parents is going to affect the kind of parent that you become. It's going to affect the way you relate to everybody else in life. This secret is so crucial that it affects society, it affects relationships, it affects your psychological health. We'll see in a moment it affects your physical health. It's an absolutely crucial secret if we want to have exceptional living. And you'll notice that Ephesians quotes the top passage, Exodus, and it mentions specifically that this is the commandment with the promise that we would live a long life. You want to live real life, you want to live exceptional life, you want to live a good life, then you've got to master this secret of exceptional living. And I want to look at it from two standpoints today. I want to ask the question, why should we honor our parents? And B, how should we honor our parents? Because if we can answer those two questions, we'll understand what it means to put families first in our lives as a secret of exceptional living. So first of all, why should we honor our parents? Because, folks, let's face it, it's not easy to do. The easy thing to do is to have scorn and contempt for your parents. Everybody knows that. We all know how hard it is when you're growing up to respect people that just can't take two ends of the string and tie them together. They're just so hopelessly out of it, and you're so cool now. You were born in the world demanding that all of your needs be met. And now, they messed that up too, by the way. Now, you are trying to establish your identity in a hostile world. So children are basically selfish. Teenagers know you've got a fatal disease. Young adults, of course, are past that, but that's because they've left home, and now they're consumed in their careers and their marriages. And then you finally get up to this plateau where you're supposed to enjoy things, and wouldn't you know it, your folks mess up by getting old. Now they need your help. They need you to fix the screen doors, if anybody has those anymore. They need you to fix the garage door opener. They need you maybe to mow the lawn or take them to the doctor. Alvera Mikkelsen tells about when she got between 45 and 55, her big consolation in life was knowing that at last she would have the kids past the orthodontist stage, now past the babysitting stages, and a husband with a secure job and finally some money coming in and a decent home and a good neighborhood and the cars fixed. What she wasn't prepared for was how bad late adolescence was for her kids, how tough it was to pay the college bills, and how difficult it was having two parents on both sides of the family, who were one of whom was widowed in each side of the family, and the particular burdens that that brought upon them. A part of the problem, it means that we see our parents as worrisome burdens. It makes it hard to honor them. Secondly, we're living in a peculiar age, because with the Industrial Revolution, which you probably haven't reflected or pondered on in a long time, but with that came a monumental change. Let me explain it to you the way Joy Davidman does. Quote, "Once there were 100 kinds of shared creation that bound parents and children together, spinning, weaving, baking breads, clothing the household, making its furniture, brewing beer, curing meat, all these in addition to the particular trade in which the family specialized. The old taught and governed the young honored the old for their knowledge, at the same time learned to respect themselves as responsible and useful members of a household." Now today, of course, that's all changed. We don't spend our time together. We leave the house and go for parts unknown, sometimes across the country, sometimes for days, maybe weeks at a time. And we're not just talking him, we're talking her, too. And what makes it even more befuddling is the fact that knowledge changes so quickly that the truths that you and I learned growing up are hopelessly out of date by the time our kids get to a certain level in school. On top of all of that, what if you had parents that were unfair and abusive? And I just shudder to mention out loud some of the experiences that I know people have had to undergo, maybe, for all I know, people in this room, at the hands of their parents. How on earth, why on earth, should you honor parents like that? Well, the answer in here is said so that you may live a long life. I believe that includes length of life. I think there is a connection between the attitude and regard that I have for those who bore me that is going to affect my own physical health. Did you know that they did studies on this kind of thing? They studied executives who really spent time with their families and showed that they tended to have more creative energy. They were more productive, more relaxed, more confident in the time they spent at work because their families were first. They did another study somewhere in Newark, New Jersey, I believe it was, some neighborhood up there, where the families hadn't all moved out. It was one of those old neighborhoods that is rapidly passing away, where you had several generations on the block together in a strong sense of community, and they discovered that all of these stress-related disorders which plague modern society were very, very far diminished. There is more to life in the Bible, however, than just extension of life, duration. It also speaks to a quality of life. When the Bible speaks of life, it means that every relationship we bear to the people around us, the environment around us, our relationship to God, that all of these things ought to be in a right order and harmony. And when those things are right and proper, that's life. And you see, our families are crucial to that too. Take our relationship with God, for example. Your attitude toward God has been shaped by your family experience. In some ways, that's a chilling thought. It may be a negative example, and you can still understand the good news of knowing there is a father who is the opposite of what your parents were, a true father in heaven. But still, you're going to wrestle with issues and agendas that came out of your growing up. The family is the crucible that shapes attitudes and values and convictions and character. A child looks to his parents and virtually sees them as God, and he represents God to them, and how they treat him shapes who he becomes. The family is where you learn to deal with this whole business of authority. If you can't handle the most immediate primary authority there in a family, how can you possibly handle any other type of authority when you get out of the home? One of the reasons I think it's so important for parents to go to church, did you ever think about this? Was so your children could see you bowing to somebody bigger than you are. A child needs to realize that when he grows up, it doesn't mean he can just do anything he pleases, but that we're still under a higher authority. But let's talk about the relationships with other people. In families, you learn the relational skills. I think it was Rollo May who said one of the advantages of living in a small town is that you have to learn how to live with your enemies. We could say the same thing about a family. It's in those families that you learn how to live with your enemies. It's the people you're close to that can hurt you the most. And the skills that you learn there and develop there will get you all the way through life. How many people have you run into, or maybe you're one of those, that you're fighting battles, you're taking out on other people things you should be resolving back at home, and you never learn those skills and how to deal with that? The home should be a colony of caring. It should be filled with people who are committed to each other and care for each other and counsel each other and comfort each other. Robert Frost says, home is the place where you have to go and they have to take you in when you go there. And every one of us needs some kind of place and refuge from the world like that. So the reason we need to master this regard to our parents is because it has something to do with the duration of life and with the quality of life and the relationships we bear to God and to other people. Second reason we need to do it is simply because we owe our parents something. Now, we're all independent Americans. We don't want to be in debt to anybody, unless it's the bank. But look at this verse down here, 1 Timothy 5:4. It says, if a widow has children or grandchildren, they should put their religion into practice by caring for their family and repaying their parents and grandparents. Isn't that interesting? You know, it takes $250,000 to raise one child at the age of 18 today. Try to pay that back. Try to pay somebody to do that for you. It just have to take your parents to get something like that accomplished. When you came into the world, you didn't have any claims. Maybe you were cute, but you were also messy. It was a real trade-off for your parents. When you came into the world, somebody took you in and loved you and clothed you and fed you and all those kinds of things, and you owe them something for that. What it'll probably take for you, like it has for me, and I'm still in process on this, is having my own family. Some of you can remember the first time you held the firstborn in your arms and you looked down at this little child, and for the first time you had a sense of connectedness with your parents as a parent. You'd never had that before. And you thought, my dad once held me in his arms like this. My mom nursed me and cared for me. It's an overwhelming, awesome realization. And it just goes on and on and on. I remember the time I complained to my dad about my son throwing stuff on the walls with spoons and that kind of thing. And all I got was a gruff, well, he's paying you back type of comment. Only to hear my dad talk about it. It was worse when I did it. You needed a jackhammer to get that oatmeal off the wall. It may take years until you're middle-aged and buried under debts, problems, poor health, never-ending complexities from having kids of your own. You got them on one side, your parents on the other, and you're the baloney squeeze in the middle, till you begin to have a real appreciation for what your parents endured just to get you where you are. Do you remember the turtle on the fence post principle that we talk about here? And when you see a turtle on the fence post, he didn't get there by himself. We're all turtles. Our parents are the fence posts. And we are standing on the shoulders, heads and shoulders, of people that went before us. And we owe them some kind of debt for that. It's ironic, isn't it, that we start out totally dependent upon them, and before our lives are done, they're totally dependent on us in many cases. And the cycle of love is completed. That's the way God designed it. There's a third reason. It's because we want to be honored when we get to their age. Since we don't think much past 45 minutes ourselves in our lives, we may not think about this much, but I think it's implicit in this, that you may live long in the land. You honor your parents, your kids are going to be like you are. One of Grimm's fairy tales was about a couple who took in the husband's father because he was too old and weak to take care of himself. And what they did was try to have him eat at the table, but he was kind of annoying. His hands trembled, and when he'd lift the spoon up to his teeth, what were left of them, they'd clack, and he had a tendency to dribble down his chin. It just ruined the whole meal. So they put him over in the corner in the kitchen on a stool. And that worked okay for a few weeks or months until he became so old and feeble that he began dumping all his food on the floor. Well, this outraged the wife, and she built him a little wooden feeding trough and said, if you're going to eat like a pig, then we're going to feed you like a pig. And that worked okay, till one day their 4-year-old son was playing with some wooden blocks and building something. His dad says, what are you building? He says, I'm building a little feeding trough, so when I grow up and get big, I can feed you like you do Granddad. Now, that sounds frighteningly to me like what I'm reading about in the newspapers about the big Social Security standoff that's coming up the road as the baby boom works its way up that big bulge. That bulge works up the demographic python. And we suddenly find that we didn't want to have kids for the sake of zero population growth. And, of course, we scorned our parents. And suddenly there we are, and they're supposed to pay for us now. And they say, no way. You've been reading about that? There's a time bomb ticking in the background, and it'll be exquisitely ironic, frankly, for our generation who said, well, we want to go pursue our careers and everything, and there's nobody to take care of us. God intended that we take care of that, whether we not worship youth, but that we honor authority, that we honor old age, that we have respect for them. Honor your parents, lest your children dishonor you. That's the principle that he has there. And then there's a fourth one, and I like this one, because you want to make a difference in the world. That's why we ought to honor our parents. Let me quote to you from an historian. Some of you may be familiar with him, Will Durant. He says this, quote, civilization is a stream with banks. The stream is sometimes filled with blood from people killing, stealing, shouting, and doing things historians usually record, while on the banks, unnoticed, people build homes, make love, raise children, sing songs, write poetry. The story of civilization is the story of what happened on the banks. Historians are pessimists because they ignore the banks for the river. You want to make a difference in society? The boomers, you know, came up through Nero where they were going to change everything. But the way to change it is in the family. If we don't learn the respect for authority there, what kind of stability can you have in society? You see, the family is the building block unit of social stability. You can't destroy the family or have policies that compromise the family without sawing off the very branch you're sitting on. Back in the first chapters of the Bible, the family was established before the state government. In our society, we're not supposed to think of our children as belonging to the state government. They belong to the parents because that family unit has to be protected at all costs. So when God wanted to change the world, it's kind of interesting in Genesis. There's one chapter that tells about people coming together and saying, we're going to build a Tower of Babel. We're going to make a name for ourselves, you see. And it all caves in on itself. And then the next chapter is a story about a man named Abraham, and God says, psst, Abraham, come over here and follow me, and I'm going to give you a son, and you're going to have a family, and the entire world is going to be blessed through what you do. It's a very striking contrast. James Strachan says this, Abraham was chosen to be a blessing to the whole earth, but his vocation was to begin to take effect in the simplest way. He was called to teach his own household, who would again hand down the truth to their household. His being a blessing to the world depended on his being a blessing to his own home. Isn't it interesting that we spend so much time on laws, organizations, schools, social services, youth groups, everything else, but we neglect the fundamental task of simply working on making strong homes? If you could do that, you would do far more than so many other crusading things to make the world a different place to live in. And besides, you may not be able to reconstruct the world, but you could shape it in the family. And when you get to the family, nothing works unless you have a certain regard and appreciation and honor for parents. That's why you need to honor parents. That's why God puts that in there. An ancient sailor's proverb says that he who spits against the wind spits in his own face. That may be the only thing some of you remember this morning, judging from the reaction I just got. To dishonor our parents is to spit into the wind. That's what God is saying in that fifth secret. Now, that's why we should honor our parents. How should we honor our parents? The word honor in Hebrew is a word which means heavy. For somebody to have glory and honor is to carry a great weight on their shoulders. So the opposite of that would be to curse or to take lightly or to devalue our parents. Do you see how that works? So to honor our parents means to show some kind of respect, some kind of appreciation, to attach some kind of high value to them, and to communicate that high value to our parents. So when we're young, it means take out the garbage. It means obey them. It means submit to them. It means be patient with their failings. See, kids study their parents' failings. They know you far better than you know them, in the same way the prisoners know the guards better than the guards know the prisoners. But you know your parents' faults. Live with them. Bear with them. As you grow older, then the words we use, the way we refer to our parents, ought to be respectful. I remember going to buy a guitar when I was in high school, played in a band. I was totally caught up in the whole garage band scene. There was a guy in my high school who was the best guitar player I'd ever heard. I just awed this person almost to the point of envy. And I went down to the store to buy a guitar, and I was talking to the owner there, and I asked him if he knew this other guitar player, and he said, oh, yeah. Well, I wanted to engage him in a discussion on blistering guitar solos, and he wanted to talk about how this guy treated his mother. Like I really cared how he treated his mother. And yet here, 20-odd years later, what sticks out in me, and I remember being impressed at the time. I had no idea what to do with the comment. I remember thinking, why are you telling me this? Well, I have suspicions now. But he was so impressed, not by this guy's guitar playing, but by the way he treated his mother. Maybe we need a new bumper sticker that says, have you hugged your parents today? As you get fully grown, you need to be loyal. You need to remain close. You need to communicate. You may need to touch in meaningful ways. Did you know that touch actually lowers blood pressure? Kind of interesting. We need to hug our parents or shake hands or hands on shoulders. We need to communicate by meaningful touch. We need to communicate with words that have incredible power. Some of you are struggling because the words you remember when you were 7.5 years old. Forget that for the moment and realize if words have that kind of power, what kind of positive power can you have to honor your parents with your words? And then there are the actions. It's the letters that are written, the cards, the investment in phone calls home and all that kind of thing, including them in a variety of activities. And then as your parents become really aged, this passage down here is pretty strong. It says if somebody doesn't take care of his own relatives, he's denied the faith. Don't tell me how many angels dance on the head of a pin. Don't talk to me about high, lofty doctrines of Christian faith or whatever you are. But are you taking care of your family? In the passage above in Romans, I know that was a cheerful text to read this morning. But as he goes through here, it's one of these sort of catalogs of vices and ills in the world. And as the Apostle Paul writes that, he's talking about all these horrible criminals, and he includes people that are disobedient to their parents, denying the faith. One of the Ten Commandments. Do you see how crucial and important it is for us to have this kind of attitude to our parents? So as they get older, we may need to walk them through some difficult stages in our life. Is it easy? No, it's not easy. Alan Moy McGinnis tells about a woman he worked with who was 40 years old and had to take her father to the doctor all the time because they was always ill. Did she enjoy it? This is what she says. Enjoy it? Well, not if you mean pleasure in the event. Who likes sitting in a doctor's office for 2 hours waiting for him to tell your mother that her back pain is nothing but arthritis, that she's getting old and should expect those things? No, she didn't enjoy it. And yet she found a deep and profound satisfaction in caring for the one who had cared for her when she was younger. That's how we should honor our parents. But I know that underlying this whole discussion for some of us is this statement, but you didn't know my parents. You don't understand how my parents hurt me. Two approaches. One is the general approach. Of course they weren't parents. We're perfect. What did you expect? This is a broken world. We somehow have the attitude that we have the right to have perfect parents. And part of the wonder of God is that He doesn't wait for perfection to use people. It's a good thing because you're hoping He'll use you. And if he waited till you were perfect, well, hot places would freeze before that would ever happen. The greatest evil in this world was when the human race conspired to lynch the Son of God. And yet, according to the Bible, that was the moment that God chose to bring about a transaction at the cross of Jesus Christ that made it possible for us to come into fellowship with Him. For all of the sins and debts that we have to be completely canceled. That is so fantastic, people have trouble believing it. They don't think you're really saying what you're saying when you say all debts are canceled. Okay, fine. Now what do I have to do to get God's approval? No, no. All debts are canceled. It's the greatest thing God ever did. And He did it by using the worst sin that people ever did. And it means that God can take the worst things that your parents have ever done to you and turn something good and fantastic and even beautiful out of that. You know who I feel sorry for? It's Mary and Joseph. They were just ordinary people like you and me, only they were raising the Son of God in their household. What was that like? I don't have time to explore that with you, but I find that a very provocative question. Well, it doesn't mean he never woke up in the middle of the night and threw up icky-looking stuff and all the rest that goes with it. But it does mean that he never rebelled consciously. He never defied or dishonored or scorned his parents if he was the Son of God. That's astounding.
And God himself could come down to imperfect parents and honor them. One of the last words Jesus said on the cross was to Mary and John, his best friend. And he said to Mary, this is your son. John, this is your mother. He was still concerned for her, and he honored her in his last moments. If Jesus did that, we have that kind of responsibility, even if they're not perfect. We have to at least respect the office, if not the person. Now, I know what you're thinking. Yeah, fine, okay, but my parents weren't even Mary and Joseph. My parents were way down on the feeding scale, down at the bottom in the pond scum. That's where my parents were. You don't understand. I can't even tell you the horrors that my parents did. And what's even worse is if they were religious, if they were Christian parents, and they did these terrible things to me. Well, let me make some observations on that and how you're going to honor that. Number one, you're going to have to realize that you can't ignore that. See, a lot of times what we don't want to do is bring this out in the open. We want to stuff it and not deal with it. But the problem is that when you don't honor your parents, you rob yourself through some kind of odd psychological mechanism. You rob yourself of your own self-respect. If you don't go back and deal with those issues, how you look at yourself and how you look at God that came out of your family background, it's going to compromise you. It's going to hurt you. You can say, I don't have to honor my parents because they were so terrible. But God still says, honor them for the office. And the failure to do that says something about where your heart is at, and it's going to eat you up. Gary Smalley, John Trent say, people who put off coming to grips with the past often reap the same kind of harvest, a harvest where pain is multiplied and sorrow is doubled, all because they didn't face the legitimate pain that comes with facing the truth. You may have to simply come to grips with some painful realities, like a person who's amputated the limb. You simply got to come to grips with the fact that you didn't have Ward and June Cleaver for your parents. And somehow you've got to find a way to live in spite of that. And secondly, and more positively, realize that God has a future for you. You may be emotionally amputated. You may be bearing scars. You may be limping through life. You may wonder, why did God do this to me? It's the same question somebody who's paralyzed physically could ask. And God isn't going to give you a real clear answer to that question. But you can face the future with bitterness that'll eat you alive. Or you can face the future and say, you know, I survived. I'm still here. God made me survive for a purpose. And he has something beautiful to bring out of this situation. As I reflected on this, I was struck at how many people in the Bible came out of bad home situations. Moses was put in a little boat and sent down a river. Remember that? Had to grow up in the Pharaoh's household. Some of you think, well, that wasn't so bad. King David, we forget, he was like the tenth smallest in his family. He was the runt of the litter. Everybody pushed him around. He was the last in the pecking order. He got the smallest cookie, the smallest piece of cake. He was scorned by everybody. He was the one that God took out and said, I've been shaping him through those brothers of his. Let's not forget Joseph. Do you remember Joseph got sold into slavery by his brothers? He was sold into slavery, and then they went back and said, well, Dad, it's just terrible, but poor Joe got eaten by a bear. We just have this poor robe here to show what happened to him. That's a profound rejection, and the Bible spends chapters showing how Joseph became reconciled to his brothers. Even Timothy, Paul's protege, if you know the relationship between the great apostle and his young disciple Timothy. Timothy had a non-believing Gentile father and a Jewish believing mother and grandmother. He's kind of shy. I don't know if that was purely temperament and genetics or if that had something to do with the relationship with his father. But he had some weaknesses, but God used him and made him a tremendous man. So stop the if-onlys. Stop thinking if-onlys. That's all focused on the past. And I want to tell you, you can't do anything about it. You can't change World War II. You can't change who your parents were. You can't change Custer's last stand. It's just there. So turn away from the past and begin thinking, nevertheless, at least, however, next time, now that God is on my side, you can turn scars into stars, as they say, if you grasp that God has a future for you and can mold you and shape you. The key is letting go of the past. Why would we not honor parents, even if they've been abusive to us? Because we won't forgive them. Because if we forgave them and we canceled debts for them the way we want God to do for us, then we would find a way to honor them. Honoring doesn't mean that you like them. It doesn't mean that you pretend that they were different than they were. It doesn't mean making excuses for your parents. It simply means honoring them because they were your parents and not somebody else. and because God put them over you, and He understands the pain. And because if you don't free the debts, you don't cancel the debts, you're going to carry a ball and chain around with you all through life. You will be shackled to those parents, and when they die, you will still be shackled to them, and you won't know how to go back and straighten things out with them. I want to hasten to say that you can work that out. It isn't all over if your parents have passed on. But you don't want to be shackled. You don't want to have to face that. There was a woman who was physically abused by her alcoholic father while growing up, and his unpredictable moods left her insecure and distressed and fearful. The first chance she had to get out of the house, she bolted out for freedom. Years later, she discovered a true father's love, one that wasn't based on performance, a love that was secure and stable and forever, and she became a Christian. She grew like a weed for the first several years, and then she hit a plateau. There were ceilings and barriers in her own spiritual life that she just couldn't seem to get over. And she realized that she was seething with anger inside, and as she traced it down and reflected on it, she began to realize that anger was anger and bitterness towards her father. She thought she'd left him on the front porch years before, and there he was, still peeking in the window at night going, boo, boo. She sought counsel. And as she wrestled with it, she finally realized, I'm going to have to make a pilgrimage home. I'm going to have to confront my father. It was very, very hard for her. I could go on a great length about all the contortions and struggles she went through, but suffice it to say that she finally went back to her father. And when she did, she sat down with him, and through tears, he hadn't seen her for 15 years. He was shocked to see her on the doorstep. He invited her in, and she sat down, and she told him the changes that had taken place in her life since she had become a Christian. And then she told him about the bitterness and the anger and the resentment that she had harbored. Now get this. She said, it was wrong for me to have those attitudes. She didn't excuse what her dad had done, but regardless of what he had done, it was her responsibility to forgive. And she asked him to forgive her. And his eyes welled with tears, and he started to shudder and to shake and just to sob convulsively. He had been eaten alive all these years with this terrible sense of bondage and failure and realization that he had been, in his own words, a terrible father. How could she ever forgive him? It wasn't a matter of him forgiving her. They had four long, intense, painful, and yet somehow wonderful hours together. And when she left that room and walked out that door, she was a free person. You don't have to like them, you don't have to approve them, but you do have to honor them and stop collecting debts. You know, you can't understand parents. I doubt if any of us realize what they went through. I really doubt that kids can ever get a really objective perspective on their own parents. But I think if you could see what God sees, you'd see people that are not just victimizers, but very often you'd see people who are victims. There's one woman I know that always felt that her dad was distant and cold, and it was a big discovery one day in talking to him to discover what his grandparents had been like, and that compared to them, he had taken giant leaps forward. She had never seen him in that light. It gave her a whole different perspective on him. You need to find, lastly, your real family in God. The problem with parents is that they're not God. And what they are is a pale reflection of the real God, the real love that deep down inside we long for and we yearn for more than anything else in the world. And when we discover that love, it makes up for the failures and the hurts and the shortcomings and all the rest. If you're in pain today, then I would say let the pain, let God use the pain. Give the pain back to God. You may have to say, God, I don't have anything else but pain. Take this. Free me from those shackles that bind me to my parents, and free me to honor them so that I can get on in life and be the parent I want to be and the citizen that I want to be and the son to you that I want to be and that you want me to be. I shared this story over a year ago, and it comes back to me over and over, and I'll share it again by Philip Yancey, who tells about visiting his mom. His dad had died at an early age, and he visited his mom, and they went through mementos together and laughed about old times, and he found an old picture of him as an infant. And what was odd about it was all crumpled and gnarly, and he thought, why on earth did you keep this? You got all kinds of photos of me. Why'd you keep this one? Well, she told him a story, and he'd known part of it, that his father had contracted spinal polio when he was 24 years old, back in 1950, when polio was like AIDS today. And he was paralyzed, and he was in an iron lung for the last 3 months of his life. There was a little mirror up there so that he could look and see his wife behind him when she came to visit. And there was a little metal knob there, and they took that picture and they stuck it in there. The picture would just sit there. And apparently his dad had spent the last 3 months of his life just looking at that picture of his one-year-old infant son. And Phil Yancey says that when his mom told him that story, a weird and powerful emotion swept over him as he began to realize that before he had a whole lot of self-identity or consciousness or anything, someone that he hadn't really known well at all was watching him the whole time. His dad was a Christian, so he's certain that his dad prayed for him in those last hours of his life. I think so, too, because Phil Yancey is writing fantastic books. I mean, they're just tremendous. God is using this writer in a tremendous way. But what struck Yancey was that that's like God, and that's what you and I need to grasp, is that in ways we don't realize, in ways we can't grasp now, and we may only discover years down the road looking at a crumpled photo or in heaven for all I know, we're going to discover that back in the shadows in ways we could never appreciate, God was always standing there and watching and loving and deeply, deeply caring. This is a God who took his son and sacrificed him on a cross. Do you grasp what that means? Because I think Christianity is basically understanding that I'm somebody because God loved me and he sacrificed his only son for me. And all of that is tied in with why I should honor my parents and how I honor my parents by releasing the past. It's a command that I have to make a choice to obey. It doesn't happen automatically. I have to decide that that's a secret of life. I want to live an exceptional life. I'm going to wrap myself around it. I want to honor my parents, and I want to be an honorable parent, so I'll be free to enter into the fullness of the acceptance that I can have as a son of God and a daughter. Let's pray.